Thank you. Please. Good morning. We're here for oral argument in our case number 1CACV25-0545FC, Robert Barnes versus Tiffany Richardson. As a reminder, the proceedings are being video recorded and live streamed. The recording will be uploaded to the court's YouTube channel in the next day or two. Counsel, when you begin your argument, please identify yourself and your client. Each side will have 20 minutes. The appellant may reserve time for rebuttal, but you are responsible for keeping track of your own time. We have conferenced the case. We've read the briefs. And with that, counsel, you may begin.
May it please the court, good morning. My name is Stanley David Murray. I'm the attorney for the appellant, Robert Barnes, who is also represented by Mr. Ronald Cossack, who is also seated at the appellant's table. I would like to reserve about 5 minutes of my time, just to let you know. And also, I'm going to refer to the appellant as father and the appellee as mother. But when it comes to the children, I know the court prefers that we don't use their real names. So for the child that's living with mother, I'll refer to as the older child. And for the child that's living with my client, as the younger child. And you'll see how that affects the calculations that were done here. The orders that you see before you, the child support orders, are a mess, quite frankly. There's improper calculations as to the start date of child support, improper calculation as to the amount that's owed for past child support, improper calculations for temporary orders and current support. And to make matters worse, there was no consideration of the monies that my client had been paying pursuant to that prior Washington order that covered both children. Although the order does not say that, that's how the parties treated it. And so let me go right to the decision itself on page 16. And I believe it's at index of record 228, where the court first talks about the amount of $296,497 owed in past child support for the period from October 21st to October 23rd. Well, right there, that's a blatant error, because when you add up the number of months that are involved at the rate of $1,725 per month, the total is only $41,400. So even if this was a typographical error where the court was trying to go back 3 years, as it would in an establishment case, you still only come up with about $151,000, which is less than half the money that the court awarded as past child support. So we'd ask the court to vacate that particular part of the order as well. And then there's another past support order for $36,225, which covers the period from 2/22 to 10/23. Now that amount would be included in the prior determination because it covers that same time period. So now we have a duplication of past support being added onto my client's bill. And also under ARS 25-320, which the court cited, the court did not make a retroactive award. She started with October of 2021. The relevant petition that was filed in this case for modification was filed in December of 2021 and would have taken effect, the modified amount, on January 1st of 2022. So we don't know how the court came up with this start date of October of 21. And more importantly, that's not 3 years prior to the filing of the petition for modification. Now, all these support orders, by the way, pertain to the younger child because the Washington order covered the older child until temporary orders were entered in November of 2023. What we are asking the court to do as far as the past support goes is simply go back to the first date of the full month after the service of the petition for modification, which would be January of 2022. But remember, in the meantime, my client was still paying $3,500 per month for both children. Both parents acknowledged that amount covered both children.
But that's not what the Washington order said, and aren't we bound by what the Washington order says?
Yes, sir, but since it was domesticated here in Arizona, Arizona defenses apply to the enforcement of that judgment. And so one of those defenses, obviously, is waiver, which we assert the trial exhibit P133 establishes that mother waived support. She had a chance to ask for support way back in the initial proceedings, I believe, in July of 2019. And that affidavit that she filed in both state of Washington said, hey, I didn't ask for child support back then because I knew the Washington order covered both children. So the important dates to remember here are January 2022, and then the temporary order taking effect in November of 2023. My client is entitled to some sort of reimbursement for the overpayments that he made because he was still paying $3,500 per month until November of 2023 when the temporary orders took effect. In regard to the temporary orders, it was determined that for the younger child, the father would pay $721 per month. But in the final order, it was determined he would pay $363 per month. So because the judge ordered that the temporary order be modified to that $363, my client has been making overpayments that weren't considered by the court. Father had overpaid $5,728 according to our math, and that only covered the younger child. Yes, there was a difference in the child support that was owed on temporary orders for the older child. I'm getting complicated here. But for that offset, with the underpayments that he made for the older child, the overpayments that he made for the younger child results in a credit of $500 or so that, again, the judge overlooked. So I want to emphasize that no credit for prior payments was given by the trial court, when it was established pretty clearly, based on the evidence, the P-133 document, my client's testimony at trial, at trial transcript page 118, and his allegations in his petition for modification of child custody, where again, it's been emphasized over and over, the $3,500 applied to both children until the temporary orders took effect. Okay, the second issue I want to address is the
$3,500 applied to both children until the temporary orders took effect because of your equitable argument?
Because of the waiver argument, yes, sir. And then you'll see the trial court did part of it correct because it filed two separate worksheets, one for the older child, one for the younger child. And then you combine that to see that my client's total obligation back on temporary orders was $2,259 per month. The final order was $2,509 per month for both children. But unfortunately, the court didn't do that same two-step worksheet. It used one worksheet applied to two children. And that's incorrect because under the guidelines, section 5F says that when you have two children with different parenting times, you have to do the worksheet under the first schedule and then again under the second, and then you combine it. And again, the trial court made an error there. So the current child support is incorrect because of that combination rather than the two separate worksheets, but also because of parenting time. And parenting time is the next issue we want to talk about. The temporary orders schedule is pretty much incorporated into the final decree, the final orders.
Can we back up for just a second on the Washington order?
Yes, sir.
So I understand there was an issue with the birth certificate at the time the Washington order was issued, and only older child is listed on the child support order. Mom and dad could have gone in together to the court, and even the birth certificate issue aside, mm-hmm. could have said, this is dad, for paternity purposes, we want to make clear, we stipulate that this order applies to both children. They could have done that, correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
In Washington. But they guess, I'm speculating here, but I would guess they figured, well, we understand between ourselves that it covers both children, so why bother with the technicalities? Oh, I was talking about parenting time. The the way that it's calculated is not the way that the mother's argument is in her answering brief.
Sorry, I'm going to interrupt you again.
Sure.
In the briefing, there seems to be this agreement between the parties that Arizona didn't have jurisdiction, personal jurisdiction over father. And I'm scratching my head just a little bit on that. So help me understand.
I am too, because when you come into Arizona asking for affirmative relief,
right? Father filed the petition.
He did.
And then there's this agreement that Arizona doesn't have jurisdiction. So I'm just not quite clear there.
Right. I believe Arizona did have personal jurisdiction, okay, because father came into Arizona seeking affirmative relief. But that consent decree was entered way back in 2021. Nobody appealed it. Nobody challenged it. So I guess technically it's the law of the case that child support was never determined until father filed this petition for modification of child support in December of 2021.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Let me go back on another point. Also, you have made the argument that mother waived child support as to the other child. Did father raise that argument in a timely manner?
Well, it came up in the trial was continued so many times that when they finally did have the trial, yes, the issue was brought up in both the pretrial statement and in his testimony at page 113 through 115.
Okay, so he raised the argument to the trial court that mother waived her claim for past child support for the other child.
Yes, sir. I believe it's timely because it was the issue that was pending before the court that had to be decided among other issues that were presented.
Did the court address that argument?
Did the court in the final orders that it entered?
Right.
No, I don't think it did. Yeah. Because, well, yeah, obviously because she didn't give credit to my client when we asked for it. So.
Impliedly?
Impliedly.
Impliedly.
Not word for word. Okay. So I'll get back to the pairing time issue. The judge used the figure of 120 days. And when you calculate pairing time, you don't do it the way it was suggested in the answering brief, with all due respect. When you have regular pairing time and summer pairing time, you don't take 52 weeks, divide it by two, and multiply the number of weekends that the one parent has, because the summer time takes over and interrupts the regular schedule. So technically, you only have 42 weeks of regular time, and then the summer schedule kicks in for 10 weeks. My client had 7 weeks, and mother had 3 weeks. So the math right there would challenge the decision that 120 days should be down to between 80 and 95. Again, if this case is remanded, that would be an issue for the lower court to determine, but I want to point out the error that was made here.
I'm a little bit confused by that. Why would we be breaking up the year and not just counting days?
We're counting days, but we're counting days on a breakup of when regular time stops, which in this case she had three every other weekends. That adds up to 3 times 21.
Oh, I see. You're saying you can't say every other weekend 52 weeks a year because someone has full time. So you're saying she didn't correctly count days.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
All right. And actually, mother testified at trial based on what was going on with the temporary order schedule, which again was pretty much similar to what the final order, that she only exercised 85 days per year. So by that admission itself, the court was wrong for using 120 days. And this is important because it reduces the adjustment from 20% for 120 days down to 10 to 15% for that ratio or that time period between 80 and 90 days. So again, on the current child support, we're asking the court to remand that issue so that it could be properly calculated. Our next issue is the attorney's fees that were awarded to mother. Yes, there was a financial disparity, but look at what the actions were of mother during that litigation. The trial court even itemized all the interference with parenting time, the alienation of the children from mother or from father, the four DCS reports that were found unsubstantiated, the police involvement, the charges that my client committed sexual assault of one of the children, her lack of discovery or disclosure, and then the insistence on this past support award when she clearly waived it. These are a number of factors of unreasonableness that should have quashed any award of attorney's fees.
Even if the Superior Court found mother unreasonable, could it still award attorney's fees based on financial disparity?
That could happen because they all have to do is consider the two different factors.
Both, and either one can get you there, correct?
Yes, sir. I believe that's the Mangan case that says you don't have to find both factors apply. But
and
in this situation.
Isn't that ultimately what you're asking us to reweigh findings that the court made and come out differently?
No, you don't have to reweigh any findings. What you would
Well, you're saying something should have outweighed something else, and that was a determination for the Superior Court to make, whether the income disparity and the unreasonableness, weighing those and coming out and saying one outweighs the other. Isn't it always just asking us to reweigh in that regard?
Well, because the judge concluded that neither party was unreasonable, this court has the authority to look at the record to see, is there any evidence to support that? And we believe the evidence, the findings that the judge made under the legal decision-making section of the order, says no, she wasn't reasonable whatsoever. And so attorney's fees should not have been awarded to the mother, perhaps even the father. But we're not asking for that. We're asking for attorney's fees on appeal, but not in the trial court.
Okay.
So again, we're asking for a vacating of the attorney's fees award. I've only got 4 minutes left, and I've got other issues to cover, but let me just conclude with the relief requested is that the court vacate all of these child support orders, remand it for retrial, and advise the court that they need to do two worksheets rather than just the one worksheet. Credit father for all the child support that he paid up to November of 2023. Remand the child support orders for proper parenting time adjustment. Vacate the award of mother, of attorney's fees for mother, and award my client attorney's fees. And then I'll save my time for rebuttal for me. Thank you, Your Honor, sir.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Kevin Jensen with Genesis Legal Group, and I represent the appellee, Tiffany Richardson, in this matter. I will try to do what counsel did and refer to the children as the older child and the younger child. Your Honors, this case really comes down to one narrow issue, and that is how this court should interpret and apply the Washington order and whether or not Arizona had a right to establish a child support order for the younger child. And let me before I go into that, I do want to concede one thing that I think counsel made a point of, and we actually agree with, which is the $296,497 past child support amount. We don't think that's accurate either.
What should it be?
Well, I can tell you what we argued in our pretrial statement and at trial. It's around $105,000.
Okay.
That's what we argued.
But we don't need to figure that out. It would go back to the Superior Court.
Correct. Our position on that specific issue, and really for the case in general, is there should be a narrow remand to the trial court to recalculate the past due support owed by father in this case. Spoiler alert as to the other issues, our position is that the trial court got it right.
So let me jump in then.
Okay.
On the Washington order.
Thank you.
So on its face, the Washington order only addressed the older child. But it seems from a review of the record, it's pretty clear that both mother and father understood the order to address both children. I think the upward deviation was about 3.5 times what would have been child support in Washington. So from an equity lens, or what role should equity play in our analysis of the appeal on that issue?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's an interesting question because it's not really an argument that they made down below. And I know one question the counsel got was, what about this waiver argument that you made? When did that come up? I will submit that I grabbed the pretrial statement based on counsel's reference. I don't see the argument in there for waiver, and I really don't think that it came up until we got here, because they realized when we started arguing full faith and credit that they had a problem, because the full faith and credit clause requires this court, the trial court, and this court to give credit to the order as it's written, which is only to the older child. And nobody disputes this at this point, excuse me. So then they came up with the waiver argument. The problem with waiver is that, first of all, the document signed doesn't specify that she's waiving anything. Waiver typically requires a clear indication that you're waiving something, but there's something else that's really, really important if you're going to waive something like child support, which is you've got to have a court adopt that. Child support isn't one of those things that the parties can just go and...
You have to show a best interest. That it's in the child's best interest that a parent not pay child support to this child. You're deviating to zero with the deviation should show what is owed in child support, that you want it to be zero, and here's why, and then the court says, okay.
That's exactly right. And that's exactly our position, is that they could have gone back to the Washington court and said, hey, you know, we need to, whatever they need to do in Washington, I don't know the procedures, but they could have taken their agreement and tried to have that adopted as part of the order. I suppose they could have tried to do that here, but it's clear that they presented this document at trial, and the trial court didn't bite. The trial court didn't agree. I will submit that the trial court didn't necessarily address it at all in the order, but I think you can infer from that whatever argument they were making as to the application of P-133, the trial court did not agree with that. And they have not established, at least in our view, the necessary elements to for this court to say, well, there was a waiver here. The trial court's job is not to rewrite the order from Washington. And what happened in this case is that they absolutely agreed to the older child having child support ordered in Washington. And then when they came to Arizona in 2019, father filed a petition to establish, which included a request to establish child support. Now, that's significant, and the trial court found that to be significant because in the court order, the trial court went back to the service date of 2019 as the date that child support was at least requested to be established in the state of Arizona for the younger child.
Was it filed as a petition to modify or a petition to establish?
There was a petition to establish. Let me be accurate on this. There was a petition to establish filed by father July 2nd, 2019 in Arizona.
And they stipulated to resolve that. So that's why, and no one appealed that. So
that's true.
Set. And you're saying that she wasn't, just because they didn't establish child support, that there is no such thing as waiving child support without additional findings about best interests.
That's correct.
Okay. So the court took their stipulation regarding paternity, and that ended it. And even though child support wasn't established from that 2019 petition, and that's kind of the crux of one of your arguments, is that you're calling it an establishment of child support at that point because it had never been established before, and they're calling it a modification off the back of the Washington order, that we've always been paying child support, right, and therefore we're seeking to modify it. I think the court saw it differently. No, sorry.
Sorry, Judge, I didn't mean to interrupt. I think the problem with their modification argument as to the younger child is that you can't modify something that doesn't exist. If there was never an actual order...
That it be zero.
Well, but that's not what... There was never an order for zero,
right,
for the younger child. I actually agree, Judge Bailey, that if there had been an order for zero child support, which is a completely valid,
right,
child support order, then the modification,
right,
would have made complete sense. But where there had never actually been a child support order established for the younger child, you have to establish it first. And I think if you look at 25320, and you can look at 25809 as well, and I'll just read briefly, if I may, from ARS 25320B, if child support has not been ordered by a child support order, and if the court deems child support appropriate, the court shall direct using retroactive application of the child support guidelines to the date of filing a dissolution of marriage, legal separation, maintenance, or child support proceeding. That's the key language.
But in ordering the retroactive support, the court can consider equitable factors, correct?
The court can consider equitable factors. I think in this case, I don't think that we have a problem with the court considering equitable factors as it applies to the application of the order as written in Washington. I mean, we don't really have anything in a court order. We don't have at all anything in a court order that says this is what the parties agreed to do, and we're adopting that. That's the problem. So you have to take it for what it means.
Well, did the trial court here say, I've considered your equitable arguments and I'm rejecting them? Or did the trial court say, I have no discretion to consider equitable factors, so I'm just going to apply what's written in the Washington orders?
I don't think the I don't think the trial court said any of those things. It seems to me, at least as it came to P133, that the trial court was silent. And that's why I said earlier that, candidly, I think that the inference is that the evidence was presented, both in terms of the declaration itself and the testimony of the parties. And frankly, if you read the transcripts, I do think there's a little bit of a conflict in terms of what they're representing, at least as to my client's position. But you can infer that, given that evidence, the court didn't say anything.
So no order is a denial. You're saying no reference to it. If they found it raised, then no reference to a waiver is a denial of any argument, I mean, of equity, that there was any, that it was a denial of any equity argument, since there's nothing in the order talking about equity.
I guess I would say yes to that. I mean, denial, or just that the court didn't find it persuasive and chose not to address it. I mean, we as trial lawyers, you know, we often go to court, especially in family law, and present sometimes hundreds of documents, and it is very common for courts not to reference every single exhibit that we you know, enter into evidence as part of their ruling.
Do you remember if appellant raised the equity argument in the motion to alter or amend that was stricken?
I have to confess, Judge, that since I was not trial counsel and did not actually deal with that,
I can look.
I just don't
if
remember.
You know.
I apologize.
Sure.
I don't recall. It seems, at least it seems from his appellate argument, that perhaps was something that came up. But I don't want to say for sure because I just don't recall. So our position really comes down to this. And I think I said this from the beginning. The error was an issue. The issue is narrow, whether or not the Washington order must be honored. It should. Whether the Arizona trial court had the authority to establish child support for the younger child, it did, and chose to do so appropriately. I think the court has discretion to determine how far back it wants to go in terms of retroactive child support. We don't have a quarrel with the time frame that the judge used in calculating the past child support. I would just reiterate that it is our position that the number is wrong. We think it's closer to $105,000. So, you know, certainly a remand with a request to recalculate child support or the back child support is appropriate.
Does your suggested figure in lieu of the 296 figure, does that take into account the points that Mr. Murray made about child parenting time being miscalculated? It shouldn't be 120 days. It should be less.
Yeah, admittedly, Judge Kiley, I looked at that. I think we laid out in our brief what we thought the calculation for days are. We think we're accurate, but I suppose that if the trial court in recalculating wanted to readdress that, we're not gonna fuss too much with that. I mean, it's a swing of maybe 10 or 15 days, and it may impact certainly child support, but at the end of the day, we certainly don't have a problem with the judge reassessing that. I think we all think we're right. We think we're right in terms of our number as far as parenting days. But I understand the argument on the other side, and the trial court can certainly review that if this court deems that to be an appropriate part of the remand. I do want to just address briefly the other two issues. I don't think Mr. Murray spent too much time on the Rule 83 argument, but I'll address it briefly. Rule 83 is pretty clear. A judge can summarily deny or dismiss a Rule 83 motion for any reason at all. We filed our motion to strike. The court agreed, and that was that. But at the end of the day, you know, if you look at the issue of were they prejudiced, I don't think so, because here we are in front of you all today, and they're able to present every single argument that they would have addressed with the trial court in their Rule 83 motion. So there's no prejudice here. I really don't know, frankly, what the remedy would be anyway for that. So we would ask that the court deny their request on that one, on Rule 83. The next issue is the attorney fee issue, and I think Judge Bailey, I think that you kind of hit the hammer on the head, the nail on the head. Boy, I didn't say that right, did I? The nail on the head is that what they're really asking this court to do is enter different findings than the trial court made when it comes to attorney fees. ARS 25-324, boy, we all know it. We've all argued it, you know, a million times as trial lawyers, and it's clear. We look at disparity of income and the reasonableness of the parties. I suppose if they wanted more in-depth findings, they could have asked for findings of facts and conclusions of law, but they didn't do that. So the trial court heard the evidence. Even if the trial court listed all the things that the trial court, that they find to be unreasonable by my client, at the end of the day, the trial court said, I don't think either party did anything unreasonable in this litigation, didn't find unreasonableness. But the trial court did find that there's a significant disparity of income, and it's completely appropriate under that circumstance for an attorney fee award to be issued, and frankly happens frequently. So our position is that this court should not rewrite the findings of the trial court and make a different finding than what the trial court did. The trial court is in the best position and has the discretion to find reasonableness or not, and it found that, at least in, as pertains to the attorney fee award, my client did not act unreasonably. So we would ask that that be denied. We also ask that for purposes of this appeal that the court consider and award my client attorney fees under the same exact reason. There is a significant disparity of income. I know that I have some more time left. I believe that I've covered the issues that I want. Unless the court has any other questions for me, I will finish. Thank you.
Mr. Murray.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, Stanley David Murray again for the appellant. Just to answer Judge Bailey's question about the motion to alter or amend, yes, the $3,500 per month issue was raised when we asked for the overpayment calculation, but in my quick review, I didn't see any mention of the word waiver or estoppel.
It does not.
That I just looked at it real quickly. I just wanted to make sure that we did raise the $3,500 per month issue as an offset that we should have gotten credit for in the motion to alter.
But in your same theory from the Washington case, that was an agreement, not as a equity argument, that separate from the fact that, I mean, your argument, I think, is that she really was included. The younger child really was included in the Washington order. And
yes,
that was kind of your theory of the case. Not that, and even if you don't believe that she was included in that order, Your Honor, Superior Court, there's an equity argument to be made that amount has been paid to mother, which was 2.5 times what older child's. You didn't make that separate kind of alternative argument that even if you don't believe she's included in the Washington order, that equity demands that he get credit for paying an amount that covered both children, that both parties agree covered both children.
Not word for word.
Okay.
But the evidence that came in, and Mr. Kosak had to jump through a lot of hoops to get that Exhibit P-133 entered, established a waiver argument. So based on the record, that issue is before
the
trial
court. Well,
what do you
mean established the waiver argument without saying that you're asking?
Well, I mean, because of what it says, I think we quoted it in our opening brief. She says, I didn't ask for child support because I understood that it covered both children. And then my client reemphasized that when he testified at trial that, yeah, it covered both kids.
But how would the court at the time have teased out the argument that covered both children because that's what I thought the Washington order said, or covered both children but even if you don't believe that the Washington order said, in equity you should find that I shouldn't be made to pay again amounts that I've already been paying that we both agree went to both children. Do you see my distinction? Because I don't know that the trial court could have ruled on an equity argument if it wasn't raised. You're saying by implication it was raised, but I'm not sure that's enough, and I'm asking you to tell me why it would be enough if you hadn't raised it explicitly. Because then you're asking the court to make two findings, finding whether she was actually included in that Washington order or finding in the alternative that equity demands that he be given some credit for the amount of money he's been paying.
Well, I think when you say that you've been paying $3,500 per month since 2017 for both children, the equity argument is there. I mean, the judge knows that the Washington order only says $3,500 for the one child, but then the judge should have inquired about the party's activities, how they handled that support. Like Judge Williams had said, nobody went back to court to modify that when they could have done it in Washington because they understood it covered both children.
But I think the other side would say we would have had a right to respond to a pure equity argument, except it wasn't raised. We were only responding to the fact that she couldn't have been included in that Washington order because you didn't have jurisdiction because of the birth certificate issue, whatever. Like, we didn't get to independently respond to an equity argument because you didn't explicitly raise it.
Well, not the equity argument necessarily, but the overpayment argument they could have responded to. And they didn't.
You said Father raised the argument that the $3,500 covered both children. And what did Mother testify on that point?
Oh, she said it only applied in Washington. And her testimony.
But she agreed it covered both children.
Yes, in the declaration that she had filed in the state of Washington. And then when she testified on cross-examination by Mr. Cossack, she said, oh, that only applied in Washington. And so Mr. Cossack followed up to say, you know, if you don't have this waiver issue, so you're asking for the $3,500 per month for both kids since 2017, and now you're asking for retroactive past child support all the way back to 2019 or whatever it was. Don't you think that's an extra windfall for you? And she didn't really answer that question, if I recall from the testimony.
All right, thank you. Your time is up.
Thank you.
We will take this matter under advisement and issue our ruling in due course. Thank you.